when you have great coaches. Then after you have great coaches, you get great players. You have a great organization, and you tell them one thing. Just win, baby.
Go Radio Nation, welcome to Just Pod Baby. I'm your host, Evan Grote, and this episode is brought to you by SB Nation, part of the Silver and Black Pride Podcast Network. It's been a few weeks, since we've last spoke, but this is the first of many upcoming off-season editions of the podcast. Again, we took a few weeks off there after the season ended, but I started getting the itch, so I figured I needed to get behind the mic and get some thoughts out there to you guys. There has been some news that has come down the pipeline since we last spoke. Some roster moves were made. The Raiders are now officially known as the Las Vegas Raiders. And, of course, there has been plenty of draft talk going on with the completion of the Senior Bowl last week. Now, speaking of the Senior Bowl, later in the show I'll be joined by Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic. You don't want to miss that conversation I had with him. Lots of good information from him, so make sure you tune in for that later on in the show. So let's get right into it. Let's jump right into it. Some updated roster moves that were made since the last time that we spoke. Guard Richie Incognito was signed to a 2-year contract extension worth up to $14 million. Incognito was brought in last year to solidify an offensive line that really struggled to protect Derek Carr in 2018. Incognito, as well as Trent Brown, were both brought in, and to add some added protection on the line there. Now, this addition of Incognito really came under some heavy scrutiny due to his checkered past, and rightfully so. He had definitely had some issues, you could say, surrounding his mental health. He had some run-ins with the law and whatnot, but really, he was able to put that behind him. He served his 2-game suspension, and he was really a good soldier for the team this year, and a good leader inside that locker room. Now, I can't lie, I was one of those skeptics who questioned the move to bring in Incognito, but I remember in Mike Mayock's first interview after Incognito was signed, he made it clear that there was going to be a plan in place to help Richie stay on the right path, and it really seemed to work out well for both parties involved. Now, Incognito will turn 37 during the season, this upcoming 2020 season, you do have some concerns about his age, but despite his advanced age, he had a really solid season playing between Colton Miller and Rodney Hudson. I went and took a look at some advanced stats over at Sports Info Solutions, which is where our lead site editor at SilverandBlackPride.com, Cyril, actually does some work, and I took a look at some of the analytic numbers, and in 414 passing snaps, he surrendered only 3 blown blocks. So that's pretty impressive. So he was really solid. Really, he was one of the best guards in football this year. So definitely a great value signing there. They got a lot of bang for their buck. I also think that his presence was one of the key factors in the development of Colton Miller in his second season. Now, I know that Colton Miller got a lot stronger and put on some weight throughout the offseason, but I do think having a veteran like Incognito next to Miller really helped him along this year. He did miss 2 games down the stretch with an injury. So I do have some concerns going forward about, will the body hold up as he, 37, 38, he'll be He'll be, 39 years old when this contract expires. Will the body hold up for him in the next 2 years? But, you know, you can't argue the production or the value that they found with Incognito. The next roster move that was made was re-signing another offensive lineman, and that was Denzel Good. His contract is for 1 year, and I wasn't able to. I don't know exactly the terms as far as the money that is concerned with that deal, but you know, it is for 1 year, and I do like the move to bring Good back. He made 5 spot starts last season, and he more than held his own. In fact, I think it's fair to say that when he was in there, the offensive line did not miss a beat. He can play both guard spots, which is ideal. And some out there are, now not everyone may agree with this thought, but I have heard that get put out there, I guess, on social media and in other websites and whatnot that I like to read. But there are some out there that are in the belief that when you look at the makeup of the roster and the current salary cap situation, which actually is in really good shape, I believe they have about $75 million to spend this free agency should they want to. If there is one player, though, who could become a cap casualty, the name that I keep hearing is starting right guard Gabe Jackson. Jackson did not have, you know, one of his best seasons. You know, he dealt with that sprained MCL, which cost him, you know, some of the beginning parts of the season. I think he missed the first 7 weeks. I believe he came back the week after the bye. You know, was he fully healthy? Was he playing hurt? I guess was the knee an issue? Was that a factor in his down season? You know, we won't know that answer, or we don't know that answer, I should say. But one thing we do know for sure is he does have a massive hit to the salary cap. I believe that is $11 million. I think I'll have to check that out. But yeah, $11 million I believe is the hit to the cap for him. So, you know, it's possible they could choose to save that money by cutting him and just deciding to roll with Good as the starting right guard. Now, that obviously would mean they'd have to go out and get some more depth through free agency or the draft. But it is possible. Is it likely? You know, I don't know. I have heard Gruden say multiple times since taking over in his second stint that, you know, he praised the interior part of the offensive line. And now this is back when they had Osemele as well. But, you know, he has really talked about the interior of the offensive line as being one of the best in football. So I know he does like Jackson. And so I would see it as a surprise if Jackson was not back, but certainly something to keep an eye on. Now, the last notable offseason transaction that was made was deciding to bring back cornerback Nevin Lawson, also on a 1-year extension. And like Denzel Good, Lawson made 5 starts last season, and he also had appearances in 11 games total. The majority of his action came in the latter parts of the season when those injuries were beginning to mount in the secondary, specifically to LaMarcus Joyner and Darryl Worley. He you know, Lawson stepped in there and did fairly well. You know, Lawson provides the secondary with a few different things. You know, not only does he give him some depth, but he does have starting experience from his time in Detroit. And he's very versatile, and I think that's one of the things that the coaching staff likes about him. He does have the ability to play in the slot as well as on the outside. So, you know, he's a good depth player to have around. I don't think you want to rely on him to start 15, 16 games, but, you know, I think he's definitely a serviceable player and a guy that, you know, on a 1-year deal, I don't think it hurts to bring him back. Now, certainly the cornerback position is one in which you know, you should definitely expect Mike Mayock to address that position in some form, whether it's through free agency or in the draft. There's definitely some upgrades that are needed there. You know, besides Mullen, you know, who do you really feel that confident in is my question. Jonathan Abram is coming back this season off that torn labrum. What are they going to do with Joyner? Is he could, you know, could he be a cap casualty? He had a rough season as well last year. Are they going to move him back to safety where he's a little bit more comfortable? So there's definitely some question marks in the secondary, so I would definitely expect Mayock to hit that position hard. The next piece of news that I wanted to touch on has to do with the Raiders' new home, and that is Las Vegas. It's finally official as of January 22nd. You can now call them the Las Vegas Raiders. Owner Mark Davis, President Mark Bedain, and a handful of current and former players were out in Las Vegas last week to take part in the name change ceremony. They had a little presentation there out by Allegiant Stadium, and it looked like it was a really nice event. You know, I've seen the change made everywhere pretty much. It's on the website now, the Twitter page. You know, if you watch NFL Network and the ticker scrolling across the bottom, it, you know, it'll say Las Vegas Raiders. So it's definitely official. And I think that, you know, it's a change that's it's going to take some getting used to, of course, but it's something that I'm very, very excited about. You know, Vegas is a town that I just love. I've been out there four times. And I can't wait to get out there again. You know, my wife and I have small kids, so I haven't been able to get out there since I've had my two boys, but, I do plan to get out there this season. You know, I'm a native of Western New York. My wife is a Bills fan, and lucky for me, the Raiders played Buffalo this year out there in Vegas. So, I've already convinced the wife to, you know, make a trip out there with me. So, planning to be out there for that Buffalo versus you know, Raiders game this season. But also I wanted to talk about, as you know, the 2020 draft is being held in Las Vegas, and that's a smart move by the NFL, I think, to just kind of introduce you know, the fans of the league to the new market, and it'll really help put the city on the map as a football town. So I think it's a great way to kind of market the new, you know, the new football city. And plans were released last week as well for where different events will take place and which venues they will be at and whatnot. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to see them or read about them, but it looks really cool. There's going to be, you know, how before the draft, they have the red carpet, I guess. And so that's going to be held this year on the Bellagio fountains, like on the water, which is insane. They're going to build a red carpet stage right across the water. Players and their families will be boated over to the red carpet stage, and that's where they'll take part in pre-draft interviews and photos and whatnot. So that's really cool. That'll be a sight to see. And then, of course, the main stage where the picks will all be made is being held at Caesars Palace Forum. And again, that's where all the picks will be made. So it's going to be an amazing experience for not only the prospects who are going to be, you know, drafted into the league, but also their families as well as the fans. So, you know, Vegas is not going to disappoint with this event. And finally, I want to, I'll wrap up this first segment with just some brief thoughts on the Senior Bowl, which took place last week down in Mobile, Alabama. It's one of the more marquee events of this pre-draft prospect. It's definitely the most well-known of the postseason All-Star games, I guess you could say. You had the Shrine Game, the East-West Shrine Game, and I believe there's another one, but the Senior Bowl is the one that scouts and coaches recognize as you know, the more elite of the bunch. You know, I didn't get a chance to watch every minute of every practice, but I did DVR them, and I went back and watched quite a bit. And you know, as always, the quarterbacks really dominate the conversation at these types of events. But there were some really good performances throughout the week of practice and during the game by several different players. Guys like Terrell Lewis from Alabama, Bradley Anai from Utah, edge rusher, had 3 sacks in the game. You know, this is a guy who had 13 sacks during the season. Van Jefferson was praised all week long for his polished route running skills. Jason Strobridge from defensive lineman from North Carolina, who's kind of a tweener. He played at around 285 throughout the season, primarily on the defensive line. He came to the Senior Bowl weighing in at a little bit lighter, around 265, to kind of show that he has some versatility. He can line up inside, he can line up on the edge, so he definitely helped himself. Wide receiver Colin Johnson from Texas, big body, 6'6", 220, and a guy who was probably the most dominant player on the practice field. He didn't even finish the week of practice or participate in the game, and that was Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina. Really looked like a man among boys out there. So plenty of guys that made themselves some money, and the good news for the Raiders is that a lot of these guys that I mentioned play positions of need for the Raiders. So it's possible that we could see some of these guys wearing the silver and black someday. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break. When we return, I'll be joined by NFL draft analyst Dane Brugler from The Athletic. He spent the week out there in Mobile, so you're going to want to tune in for this. You will hear some of his thoughts. Don't go anywhere. On the line with me now is Dane Brugler of The Athletic. Those of you who don't know Dane, he is a NFL draft analyst for The Athletic. Dane, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you, Evan?
I'm very good, thank you. And I do want to, again, thank you for giving us some of your time tonight. I know this is a very busy time of the year for you. I know you've been traveling all over the place following some of these postseason All-Star games in college. So I appreciate you for hopping on. Now, I'd like to ask you, before we get into Senior Bowl questions and some Raider-specific draft questions, if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about your career and how it's kind of led to where you are today with The Athletic.
Well, I'm very blessed. I get to cover football for a living, specifically scouting, which has always been my passion. It really started in high school as a teenager. I enjoyed playing football, but scouting, the evaluation side of things, strategy, that's what really drove me and got me excited. And so I went to Mount Union College, Division III football powerhouse, and it just so happened that Pierre Garçon and I were seniors together. And I didn't play for Mount Union. I worked for the football team, and part of my responsibilities, whenever we'd have scouts in town, I would take care of them. And that was kind of my first introduction to the scouting world. And I still have a lot of those relationships from that networking from those times today. And so that really got me started down this path. And I've been very thankful to learn under a lot of different scouts throughout the league who have kind of gave me my scouting education about how to evaluate this game, what to look for, the traits, just different things like that. And it's something I've been able to really make a career out of. And so it's something that it's a grind. There's no question about it, but I'll never complain about being able to do this as my career. And I'm very blessed to say I can do it.
Mount Union, I'm very familiar with that school. I had some friends of mine that played some Division III football themselves, and so each year I try to catch a little bit of the Stag Bowl, which usually does feature Mount Union. So familiar with that school. Okay, let's jump right into it now with the Senior Bowl. You were there, you had a chance to kind of take it all in live. Give me some of your biggest risers. Who helped themselves out the most last week in Mobile?
I would have to say that several of the small school guys, a lot of these bigger name players, we already have a good grasp on what they do very well, what they struggle at. And a lot of guys, I think, cemented what we thought of them going in. But one area where these All-Star games really matter is the smaller school guys. You watch Division II player on tape, and you know, he's dominating, but what does that really tell you when he's, you know, going up against guys that are future accountants and dentists? And, you know, no offense to those professions, but it doesn't give you a very good gauge of how they're going to be able to perform against NFL level talent. But the Senior Bowl does. And so Adam Trautman, FCS tight end from Dayton, kind of rewrote the record books for the Dayton Flyers, all-time leading receiver, the first tight end in that conference's history to be Offensive Player of the Year. He goes to the Senior Bowl and he looks just as athletic, just as dominant as he did on tape. And this is going to sound very, very much like a hot take, but Adam Trautman has a legitimate chance to be the first tight end drafted this year. And a lot of that is because of what he did last week at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, he came into the week as a top three tight end. So it's not like he was totally off the radar. I think he was like 72 or 71 on my top 100 board, but his ability to show that he belonged at that event and get open against the safeties that were in town, really impressive. The other small school guy that really impressed was Kyle Duggar, linebacker safety from Lenoir Rhyne, Division II school, just your classic late bloomer. Didn't get a lot of chances in high school to show what he could do. Goes to Division II level and just blossoms. He has the athleticism where he can cover in space. He's twitched up. He's a very good tackler coming downhill. He can run the alley. There's so many different things you could do with him. I've talked to some teams that see him as a safety. Some believe he's a linebacker. But, you know, either way, you're getting a big-time player. I think he secured his status as a day two player. So those are just two of the names that really stood out to me as guys that I created a buzz. And, you know, as you're leaving Mobile, they left a lasting impression.
I want to talk a little bit about the trenches now. On the offensive line, in particular on the interior, was there anyone there that stood out to you? And also on the defensive line, anyone who helped themselves there?
Well, you know, I think that on the interior of the offensive line, to me, I think there's two centers that are at the top of in this draft in terms of the rankings. And it's Lloyd Cushenberry from LSU, Cesar Ruiz from Michigan. And I think there's a debate, and depending on who you talk to, the top center in this class. And some prefer Ruiz, some prefer Cushenberry. Ruiz was not at the Senior Bowl, but Cushenberry was. And I thought he did a really nice job. You know, he's coming off a 15-game season, winning the national title, goes straight to Mobile, and did a really nice job against, you know, the top-level interior talent that was there. He's a very smart guy. That's the biggest thing that kind of stands out with him, is his ability to quickly pick up concepts. He did a really nice job with the pro coaching that was there at the Senior Bowl. And I think Cushenberry helped himself with his performance in Mobile. You know, in terms of the guards, I think Jonah Jackson from Ohio State, I think he secured his status as maybe one of the top five guards in this class. Damian Lewis, Cushenberry's teammate at LSU, he performed really well. I think he put himself in the mid-round conversation, trying to get in a day two. So I think several of the interior offensive linemen helped themselves. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I think you have to start with North Carolina, Jason Strobridge. He's a player who kind of lost a little bit in for the Tar Heels program, because he played as an interior player. And he's only, you know, 270, 275. They kicked him out to edge for the Senior Bowl, and very natural there. He's explosive. You see the upper body power that he offers. I mean, he can beat you with quickness. He can beat you with strength. And so I think Jason Strobridge certainly helped himself with how he performed during practice.
Dane Burglar, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic, on the line with me. I do want to kind of shift gears, and I want to get into some more Raiders draft-specific questions here. You know, they have plenty of needs on both sides of the ball. Let's start on offense with wide receiver. Were there any guys at the Senior Bowl that, you know, aren't your top-end guys, but maybe kind of fall into that round three, round four range that impressed you at all last week?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And listen, this wide receiver class is just loaded. And, you know, that's going to be what we're going to talk about the next few months. It's going to be the main storyline throughout draft weekend. And the thing is you look at this, I mean, try to rank these receivers, and you end up with like 20 guys that you think could go top 100. but on average, only 12.5 receivers go in the top 100 picks. So who's going to be the odd man out? So I think there's going to be a lot of these receivers have talent. They're going to have discount stickers on them, and you're going to be able to get them in the late third into the fourth round. A guy like Antonio Gandy Golden from Liberty, 6'4", 216 pounds. T. Higgins, to me, the first-round talent, but I don't see a huge gap between a guy like T. Higgins and Gandy Golden, except you're going to get Gandy Golden a couple of rounds later. Very fluid athlete. He's very natural at the catch point with his tracking skills and ability to finish. He's a former gymnast, and so I think that shows on the football field. And Gandy Golden's going to be available in the third round, maybe in the fourth, depending on, you know, how these receivers shake out. Colin Johnson from Texas, another one who, coming into the year, Colin Johnson was the top senior receiver for a lot of NFL teams. National, NFS, the scouting service, had Colin Johnson as the top senior wide receiver. But his senior year did not go as planned. Nagging hamstring injury, was out half the year. He reminded people at the Senior Bowl, hey, this is why I was so highly thought of. I mean, 6'6", he has some nuance to his routes, big catch radius. And again, one of these guys that might be squeezed out of the top 75 picks. And, you know, they're going to have that discount sticker on him. So there's a lot of talent at this wide receiver position that, you know, you don't necessarily have to go. I mean, I love Jerry Jeudy. I love CeeDee Lamb. You don't have to go receiver in the first round. You might be better off going with a linebacker, a corner, a more pressing need, and then going to get your wide receiver in the third or fourth.
Yeah, I'm actually going to follow up on that question in just a second. But before I do that, I wanted to, you know, I watched some of the Senior Bowl coverage myself, and it seemed like a lot of the receivers, you know, who they kept mentioning, obviously, were Michael Pittman Jr., mm-hmm. Van Jefferson, Hill, KJ Hill from Ohio State, and Denzel Mims. Where do you think those guys will kind of end up settling in, you know, as we move through the draft process, as far as what round they'll be selected in? Where do you see them kind of settling?
I think Michael Pittman will be somewhere in the top 60. I think based off of senior year that he had, and he just cemented that at the Senior Bowl. So I don't consider him a third-round guy. I think he's more of a second-round guy. And I think the two guys, Denzel Mims and Van Jefferson, I think both they moved themselves from the fourth round into the third round and rising. I mean, both guys appeared on my list of risers from the Senior Bowl week. So I think they really helped themselves. Denzel Mims, I think once you got him out of that Baylor offense, it just, you know, there's a lot of question marks. You know, could he get off press coverage? Could he be more than just a vertical guy? Can he show the quickness and the sync that you want to see in his route running? And you didn't see that on his Baylor tape, but you did see it during Senior Bowl week. And so Denzel Mims certainly helped himself. Van Jefferson, he has a master's degree in route running. Just the corners that were there in one-on-ones, they've never faced a college wide receiver that has that type of that level of route running. And so Van Jefferson was able to take care of that. And that's what's going to help him be an immediate contributor in the NFL, is just that route running that he offers. Now, worry about the play strength a little bit, not a big yak target, but he's a guy that can get open based off of his ability to set up DBs and create his own separation.
Very good. Now you mentioned, you know, possibly the idea of, you know, not having to go after a Jerry Jeudy or a CeeDee Lamb in the first round. You talked about maybe looking to get a cornerback or even a linebacker. So I've got two questions here about that. One of the cornerbacks who I was really looking forward to seeing was LSU's Christian Fulton. Obviously, he decided to pull out of the Senior Bowl after, you know, the national championship game and whatnot. Can you give me a quick assessment of him?
Yeah, and Fulton is an instinctive guy. I mean, he's got decent size. He's a good athlete. My biggest question with him is just, can he be a consistent tackler? And then can he be a better finisher down the field? You know, he is a guy that he makes a little bit too much contact downfield when he tries to, you know, turn, find the football, make a play. But he is an athlete who can shadow receivers. He didn't have the best performance in the national title game. But when you look at his body of work, two seasons as a starter, he is a big-time player, and he's right there in that first-round mix. And really, Jeff Okuda from Ohio State's a top guy. I don't think there's many people that disagree with that. But after Okuda, you have, five, six corners that are kind of all in the same range. There's not a huge difference between these guys. And so I think you're from team to team, you're going to have different orders with, you know, Trevon Diggs from Bama, from Christian Fulton, C.J. Henderson from Florida, Damon Arnett, Ohio State, Jeff Gladney from TCU, A.J. Terrell from Clemson. These guys are really talented, and we're going to see different orders from team to team in terms of how they're going to come off the board, how early, first round, early second round. And so I don't think there's going to be any consensus after Okuda for the next five or six corners.
Now, do you feel Okuda is the only first round guy? Where do you see Fulton, say Diggs or Terrell from Clemson? Where do you see those guys settling in?
I think Okuda is the only slam dunk first rounder. I mean, he it would be a shock if he fell out of the top 9-10 picks. I think he's got a good chance to be the draft starts with Burrow and Chase Young. Barring any trades, and then there's a good chance Okuda's number three. He has the talent to do that. And then after that, it's kind of up in the air, because I know some teams, love Trevon Diggs because he's 6'2", he's over 200 pounds. He's going to run in the low 4.4s. And so the trades are off the charts, but there's some things you worry about there. Same thing was similar with C.J. Henderson, 6'1", 200 pounds, low 4.4s. Just not a playmaker, struggles as a tackler. So each one of these guys has a question mark with them. And it's just from team to team, it's going to be okay. Well, what are we most comfortable with? Maybe it's a guy like Damon Arnett or Jeff Gladney. A.J. Terrell did not have the best end to his college career, got beat quite a few times. We look at Jamar Chase, one of the best receivers in college football. But before that, A.J. Terrell, I mean, people forget the year before he picked off Tua in the national title game and returned it for a touchdown. So, this is a talented player, and teams are going to look at these guys very differently. There's going to be a different order for when they come off the board. And it could be as early as, the top 20, or we could see maybe some guy like a Christian Fulton. If he's still available in the second round, that wouldn't be a surprise.
Dane Brugler from The Athletic, NFL draft analyst, joining us here on Just Pod Baby, doing a great job here, giving us some great information. I just got two more questions for you. It's no secret that for years the Raiders defense has lacked a difference maker in the middle at linebacker. The fan base is hoping and praying that Isaiah Simmons somehow falls to them at 12. I'm not quite sure how you feel about that, but the two names that I keep mentioning on Twitter are Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen. What do you think about those two players?
Yeah, and Murray, that's where I had the Raiders going in my latest mock draft. I think he's got great play speed for the position, sideline to sideline range. He is a super competitive guy. I mean, a mean-spirited tackler, uses his length well to kind of lasso and finish ball carriers. He's an explosive blitzer. He can cover ground versus the pass. And this is a guy who he's got the juices, the competitive juices that you want. I mean, he calls himself a natural-born leader, two-time team captain. So there's a lot to like about Kenneth Murray. I think the biggest thing that I worry about, sometimes he'll be late to diagnose bad habit of taking the cheese and, going with misdirection or play action. Needs a half second to kind of sort through what the offense is doing. But once he sees it, boom, he's shot out of a cannon and goes. And that's why he's going to be a first-round player. Patrick Queen, I like a lot. He is a really fluid athlete, and he looks the part. He's a guy that I see as more of a second-round player. I think there are times where he's unable to get off the block. He doesn't finish. Too many missed tackles on his tape. I like him quite a bit. I just see him as more of an early to mid second rounder rather than a top 25 guy like I think Murray, that's where he belongs.
Okay, final question here before I let you go. You talked about your first round mock draft. So if you were calling the shots for the Raiders, and you can just kind of go off of your mock if you want, who are the players that you're targeting or even selecting in the first round with the 12th overall pick and the 19th overall pick?
Well, in my mock draft, I think it worked out perfectly for the Raiders, because I think there is a realistic scenario where they could be sitting there at number 12 and no receivers came off the board in the first 11 picks. And, I I've heard from a lot of people saying, oh, that's crazy. You know, Jerry Jeudy's a top five pick. CD Lamb's a top 10 pick. And they very well might go that early. But again, I've heard from, you know, so many people around the league saying, yeah, no way I'm taking a receiver that early because I'm going to go offensive tackle because it's a strong, top-heavy offensive tackle class. And so I'm going to get my tackle or, you know, a playmaker like Okuda or Isaiah Simmons or, you know, on and on and on, all these guys, because I feel comfortable about the receiver I'm going to get later on. And while the Raiders might also think that way, they might be in a position at sitting there at number 12 where CeeDee Lamb is too good to pass up. And I really like that fit there. I think CeeDee Lamb's the type of receiver that John Gruden's going to love, that Mike Mayock's going to love. He's a high football IQ type of receiver, strong ball skills. There's just a lot to like about him. So if he's available at number 12, I think it makes a lot of sense. And then at 19, I mean, the guy we just talked about with Kenneth Murray, I think he is the type of dude that you want on your side. He's went over triple-digit tackles each of the last 2 years. You know, there are times where, again, he's just late to see things, but his instant speed, that's the equalizer. He flows so fast. He attacks so fast. And, I mean, he's just your prototypical three-down run-and-hit linebacker, the type of guy that can be a tone setter on that side of the ball, and I think that's exactly what the Raiders have been looking for. So in all Oklahoma first round, 12 and 19, I think that would be a home run first day for the Raiders in April.
Now, real quick, you know, I've been getting a lot of feedback because I've been very pro Murray myself, and a lot of the feedback or criticisms of Murray, people are saying he's not very good in coverage. I've watched quite a few of his games this year, and it seems like Oklahoma played a lot of zone defense where he wasn't asked to match up, you know, one on one. How do you feel about him as you know, covering coverage?
Yeah, I think he covers a lot of ground. I mean, this guy, that speed that he plays with translates in reverse as well. I think that when you watch his tape, the way that Oklahoma used him, he was much more of an upfield player than in reverse in coverage. And so I think it's not necessarily that he can't do it. We just haven't seen it a ton, you know, whereas with other linebackers, you know, Isaiah Simmons and some others, they're more proven at it because we've seen him do it more. But in the small sample size that we have of Murray dropping and you know, playing in coverage, he does it just fine. And I think he'll continue to get better at when he sees more of it. He just hasn't been asked to do it a ton because he's been so explosive as a blitzer and an upfield player. And so that's how the Sooners used him, which I don't blame them at all because he was so dynamic in that type of role. So while it is something that is a little bit of a projection, again, because of the sample size, I would feel comfortable because of his athletic traits. And the way that he's just a smart player. And so I think that would translate. And I feel comfortable him being an every down guy at the NFL level.
Okay, very good. Very good. Dane, thank you so much for giving me so much time. Go get some rest, man. You've been grinding hard the last few months, and you got a lot of work still ahead of you. Draft's not until April, so make sure you get some rest. And you can follow Dane on Twitter at DP Brugler. That's Brugler. And be sure to you know, follow his work over at The Athletic. Dane, thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right, welcome back to Just Pod Baby with your host, Evan Grote. That was Dane Brugler of The Athletic. Great stuff there from Dane. Make sure you go out and give that man a follow on Twitter. Also, check out some of his work, if you're not already, over at The Athletic. He's one of the best guys in the business. I do want to comment on his two first-round picks for the Raiders in his mock. I definitely fully support the selections of CeeDee Lamb at 12, and I do think it's a possibility that he is there, as well as Kenneth Murray with the 19th overall pick. And I think I've been saying it on Twitter, if I'm not sure, you know, how many of you follow me out there on Twitter, but I've been really making a strong case for Kenneth Murray. I've been posting a lot of clips of him, but I think Kenneth Murray is a guy who they could get, even possibly if they were offered a trade in a trade back scenario. You know, if they trade back a few spots, pick up maybe another third or even a second, depending on, you know, what the trade value chart shows. But, you know, he's a guy that could probably get in the low to mid 20s. So, you know, if not, I'd be totally satisfied with them picking him up with the 19th overall pick as well. But I'm on the same page with Dane as far as CeeDee Lamb and Kenneth Murray. Okay, well, that is going to do it for this week's episode of Just Pod Baby, the first of many upcoming off-season episodes of the show. You know, I have been working hard, even though I haven't been putting out shows. I've been really trying to, you know, bang the door down and get some guests on the show for you. So I'll continue to do so, and I'll keep you guys in the loop as far as that's concerned. But, you know, give me a follow on Twitter, egrope5, and I'll try to keep you up to date on when I'm planning to record new shows. So find out that information there on Twitter. I hope everyone enjoys the big game this weekend, Super Bowl 54, Kansas City Chiefs versus San Francisco 49ers. Oh, God, I can't. Chiefs, really? Winning a Super Bowl? I don't even want to think about that. But anyhow, enjoy the game. I hope everyone has a great week. And just win, baby.